come to save little Miss Muffet, have we? Well, you're too late! A spider came and sat down beside her and frightened Miss Muffet away.
Welcome back to Horror Hunks.
Are we doing it at the same time?
I didn't know. I was just jumping in, but we got that one at the same time when we couldn't get the other one at the same time. Anyway, go for it, Stuart.
Welcome back to Horror Hunks, where we talk about the Welcome back to Horror Hunks, where we talk about the horror movies we love and the hunks we lost. My name is Stu.
I'm Chris.
I didn't think of a witty opener for this one because this movie doesn't deserve it.
This movie, I'm just going to say right now, I'm drinking right now because
I love some booze.
I knew coming into this that I was going to need alcohol in my system because this was rough.
For context, we are talking about I don't even know what year, 2008?
2006.
2006 movie, The Covenant, about a bunch of boy witches who are all rich and attractive. This movie is awful. I'm just going to flat out say, I'm pretty sure everyone will. It's forgettable. It's awful. And I think we're just talking about it because the male cast in it is ridiculously attractive. And that's, the basis that horror hunks.
I'm not so sure that everybody is so hot in this. I wrote a review. I'm doing Letterboxd again, and I'm trying to review the movies as I watch them. Pulling up my review for this movie right now, actually, because it was something.
It was bad. So this movie has a lot of, it was 2006. It was the height of Twilight?
Yeah, it was, Twilight the movie came out in 2008. I feel like this movie was very much more so a kind of The Craft, but edgier.
I wouldn't even say edgier. I feel like
it was trying to be edgier.
It really came out before Twilight because it feels like it was just a ripoff of Twilight.
Yeah, so I don't even know exactly what this movie was about.
I don't even know who this movie was marketed for.
Well, and that's the thing is when I wrote that review, I wrote that it felt like a early 2000s knockoff of The Craft, but made for frat guys. And it just doesn't make sense for me because it's so unintentionally or maybe intentionally homoerotic, but it seems geared towards 20-something-year-old straight men. And that's what I don't really understand.
I remember when it came out, I got it on, I watched it on pay-per-view because I wanted to see it. And that was, that was the first time I'd ever seen this movie. Last week was the second time. And I feel like I remember seeing trailers for it, and it felt like it was marketed toward men.
Yeah, it's very much
But it is homoerotic.
It's homoerotic. It's definitely geared towards men, but I don't think they knew which men they were gearing it towards. Because I think that, from what I've seen on Twitter and other social media, the majority of the men who, talk about this movie are queer, but I don't think that was their intention when making the movie. It has a very do you remember some of those X-Men knockoff movies Push and things like that, where it was just metal music and semi-decent special effects, but the cool guy is the lead, and it felt like that but gay.
Yes, that is completely accurate. So, yeah,
it's just, it was not a good movie.
But, thing...
You have a huge crush on Taylor, what's his face?
Kitsch. Yeah, Taylor Kitsch. The thing about this movie is that I sat down, I'd seen it once years ago. I didn't remember it being so bad, but I sat down to watch it. And was very intent on absorbing the plot because I couldn't remember what it was about. And I still don't know exactly what it's about. The plot is they're witches, but then I think partway through the movie, they're surprised that one of them is a witch. But I thought he was a witch the whole time, and he was a witch, but like nobody knew. It was just very confusing in a, like, I don't think they tried very hard kind of way.
This movie has a lot of the same aspects that, like, I would love in, like, a well-done movie. Like, I'm guessing it's, like, a seaside town because, one of the first scenes, they're, like, driving off of a cliff.
That's the other thing is they're in a real town. It's called Ipswich. Ipswich. So, like, the pronunciation might be wrong. I did some, like, reading up, and it's, like, where a lot of the Salem witch trials type stuff actually happened. So yeah. It's set in a real place. I'm not like a master of geography, but I don't recall Massachusetts having like giant seaside cliffs. I could be wrong.
I don't know. I did not research it all that much, but like it has aspects that I would like. I love the idea of like these witchy families like living in secret, and you know, like having like a deep history with the area. If it were well done, but it wasn't well done. And, you know, I love anything set in like a spooky place or a seaside town or something like that, if it's well done, but this was not well done. And even like the aspect of like a lost tribe, if it's well done, I like it. This was not well done. So
no.
And the basis of the movie is.
I like the idea of like the school that they're at in it feels very gothic, mm-hmm. and it has that just sort of like dark and creepy, almost like Addams Family vibe to it. But the feel of the movie did not match that at all.
No,
and it was like The Matrix meets the Addams Family or something. I just did not get the vibe they were going for.
I don't know, and I'm even more perplexed now that I know that it came out before Twilight, because it feels very Twilight.
And see, I've only seen Twilight once. I don't remember it being like, oh, I guess like with the baseball scene and stuff, like that has a very similar feel to this movie because it's like it's over the top in a way that could be camp and fun, but like unintentionally. And so like camp and fun is only good if it's kind of done on purpose, I think.
Yeah.
And this movie, they weren't going for that. It's just what happened.
So basis of the movie is we've got a bunch of witchy families who escaped the Salem witch trials, and it follows four boys who are all like BFFs, and there's really flimsy rules on how they can use their powers, and like the whole thing, like the whole like crux of it is like when they turn 18, like using their powers starts to kill them and like drain their life or something.
But I think the idea is like if they've used their power too much, they age faster, right?
Oh yeah, and they get addicted to it. So
yeah, and so like I'll go through their names really fast. We've got Caleb, Chase, Reed, and Pogue. Pogue's not a name, just for the record, but and so like they're Chase is the one that I guess like they don't know is a witch. He's just their friend who's new in town.
Yeah.
Caleb, Reed, and Pogue are like established witches, warlocks, whatever you want to call them. And they have these like self-implemented rules to only use their magic a certain way. Their magic that kind of manifests like X-Men powers, by the way. It's not like they're doing spells. They're literally shooting energy out of their hands and shit.
Well, there's five of them total, because there's the four like main ones that we first meet, and I didn't even write down their names. I know one of them is your boy Taylor or something.
Yeah, so
Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah, let me pull up their names really fast just so we have them.
As you do that, I'll just tell you what my nicknames for them were, because that's all I know them as.
I have nicknames too. Okay, so Stephen Strait plays Caleb.
He's just, you know, American Horror Story clone. He looks like every other guy who's ever been on American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Which isn't bad, because he's hot, but.
No, and I said he's just the other one. question mark, because he doesn't really have any distinguishing like characteristics about him other than I guess he's the leader, but we don't really even get the leadership vibe from him until like far into the movie.
Because he's the one who's like about to turn 18.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know.
In a shocking turn of events, Sebastian Stan plays Chase.
Which
pre-Marvel Cinematic Universe, I guess. Pre-I, Tonya. Oh, I said I have him as the Sebastian Stan one. Because, again, no real characteristics about him.
I just called him the Winter Soldier.
You called him what?
I just, like, the Winter Soldier. Every time I saw him, I'm just like, it's Bucky.
Yeah. Didn't even realize it was him at first. I knew he was in the movie, but I didn't know that Chase was him. I also think that Chase and Caleb look so much alike that I was getting them confused for the first half of the movie. We have Toby Hemingway is playing Reed. He's the blonde one.
Oh yeah, he is the witchy Nick Carter.
Even better. And then my boy Taylor Kitsch plays Pogue, and I said he's the long-haired one.
That's also how I thought of him.
Yeah. And so, and like, if anybody who's uneducated, Taylor Kitsch is actually all four of them are pretty good actors. Taylor Kitsch is a really good actor, and he was in Friday Night Lights, where he was also like this long-haired badass. And to me, this movie felt like they were taking these actors and just having them play caricatures of like what would be popular on a CW show or something like
that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, then we've got Chase Crawford as the other one who doesn't do anything. I think he has like one line.
Is he a witch?
He's a witch. He's almost forgettable. See?
I knew he was in it. They like run into him in the bar and they like argue with him a little bit and they fight him. But I didn't know he was a witch. Chase Crawford.
They didn't fight him. He was like, he's like in their like little group. He was playing pool with
No, but he's not part of the main group, though. Like, they don't like him.
No, he totally is.
Chase Crawford plays Tyler. Didn't even know the man's name. He's barely in the movie.
He's barely in the movie. See? He's so forgettable that you didn't even realize. Because he's so forgettable. No,
he's barely in the movie. He's not part of, like, that core four, though.
He totally is. He's on the movie cover. Hold on. I'm going to bring it up for you.
I'm looking at the poster right now, and there's four men on it, and he's not one of them.
Because I'm looking at a poster right now, and he's definitely there.
Regardless, he barely plays a role in this movie. He's actually, after a certain point, after that bar scene, I don't think he's in it again.
No, he comes back because they go down to the basement to like do whatever they're doing. I have no idea what they were doing to like get ready to fight the other one, like Bucky Barnes, and he's down there with them, and then he disappears. I don't think he comes back after that.
Boo boo, there's only four men on this poster.
Yeah, he's right there on the far right. Or hold on.
No, that's left. Taylor Kitsch. Oh, so he where then? Marketing for this movie was just bad because, they all look alike.
They all look alike. And he doesn't do anything. He's so forgettable that you forget that he's there. The only reason I, like, remember that he's even there and, like, part of their little, like, group is because he's on The Boys. And so the entire time I was just thinking about him as, what's his face? As The Deep on The Boys.
I haven't seen The Boys. My main thought of him in this movie was that, like, you know, when we talked about I Know What You Did Last Summer, we had that main cast and then we had Max, and Max was kind of like the outcast from the group. I thought that was Tyler's role in this movie, was that he was like wanted to be in their group, but they didn't like him.
I think he literally was just like, he's there because like three might be an awkward number for like guys. Like, it's almost like a three-way. Like, if you have four of them, it's less gay.
But then now there's five of them, though, and that's like and ultra gay. Because you got like exactly. an Eiffel, okay. you got like an Eiffel Tower, and then two people on the side. Like, that's super gay.
Let's finish out the quote the plot of this movie.
The plot near, that I don't know.
The plot, and I'm using air quotes that nobody can see, and I use that word just so sparingly. So We follow a new girl who has absolutely no character to her.
This I don't even remember her name. Sarah.
Sarah. We have Sarah, who is going to this new school that I thought was a college. It is not. It is a high school. And there's a very, like, there's a scene where she, like, thinks she sees something. Because there's, like, I don't know, these, like, weird ghost things that pop up. And she thinks she sees something in the locker room wearing just a towel. And she runs out of the hallway. And that's when blonde boy shows up. And it's like, well, just show me. And, like, they go into the locker room together. And I'm thinking, this is not, like, I want to yell at that girl. You are not safe with him.
No, like, actually, one of the.
You are almost naked. And you're going in with, like, the bad boy of the group. Like, girl, you need a rape whistle.
One of the notes that I wrote down for this movie was I would not trust a single one of these men with my drink.
Absolutely not.
They're like the good guys, but none of them, like, Caleb, I guess, is kind of, like, good in the sense that he's like, I don't want to use my magic and I have a crush on Sarah. But, like, they're all just kind of, like, douchebags.
They are all kind of douchebags. So they're all, like, these rich, witchy families in this, like, town, and, like, they start rapidly aging. They use their powers too much after they're 18, and so they're all talking about the main character, the tall drink of water.
Caleb.
Turning 18 soon, and so they're all, like, making a big deal of that, and I don't know. It's really stupid. There's hardly any plot.
The whole movie is based around, so the very beginning of the movie, the first scene, the whole school seems to be at this kind of, like, forest party, but the cops come. And when the cops come, everybody runs, and there's, like, this really, like, edgy metal music blaring, like, chase scene between the cops and the witches, and then the witches get away, and the next morning they find out that there was a dead body found at the scene of the party. And so really the entire plot of the movie is based around basically who killed this kid from their school. And it's not necessarily that they're worried about it. They just all assume that it was a witch who did it.
Yeah, they assume it was one of the four that did
it.
It's a whodunit mystery for only like half the movie.
Well, yeah, that's another complaint I have. But the police are calling it like a drug overdose. But they all just assume that one of their core group did it. They all kind of just like assume that it was Reed because he's blonde and breaks the rules sometimes. They don't really have a reason to think it's him, but they all are just like, well, it must be Reed because he's the one who likes to play pranks and he probably killed a kid.
Yeah, this is so stupid.
It's so stupid. And he's like, no, bro, I swear it wasn't me. Let's fight in an alley about it. And they do, and like nothing is resolved. Go ahead.
Let me hear this plot complaint because there's so many.
My main plot complaint is that, one, the villain is revealed about halfway through the movie, which is okay. That's fine, I guess. But it is revealed, spoilers for anybody who wants to torture themselves into watching this, it turned out to be Chase, Sebastian Stan's character, and up until that point, this man has had maybe three lines of dialogue in the movie. We know nothing about him other than he's new. And, like, it's almost, like, so blatantly in your face that the new guy would be the bad guy that you're like, oh, no way it's going to be him. He doesn't even talk. And then it is him. And I hated it.
Yeah, so picking up on your plot complaint, because there's half the movie right there, literally.
Yeah. Yep.
This movie has nothing. There's no meat. This movie is nothing but, like, this movie is nothing
there's
but
man meat.
There's man meat. There's beef, but there is no, there's
there
nothing
beef
else.
Stew? Is there beef stew?
There's some beef stew. There's lots of beef stew. We'll get to the beef stew. So they find out that Sebastian Stan is, like, this fifth witch, which they don't even, like, get into the lore of that until way later in the movie, like, almost when it's finished, that there was this other family who was exiled, and he finds out he's a witch because he intentionally killed his parents when he was a kid with magic, and then he gets adopted. But in a car wreck. And, like, so then he's already, you know, legal, so he's addicted to using magic, and he like wants to like wait for Main Beefcake to like get his powers on his, like when he turns 18, so he can like suck up his powers, and that's it. That's the movie. That is literally the movie.
The whole plot is that basically Chase slash Sebastian Stan wants to steal Caleb's powers. But there's this whole mythology in the movie that they do not bother to explain. And that's also annoying because, like, had this been a TV series, I feel like they could have at least delved into, like, what some of this stuff meant. But in the movie, they just start talking like we're supposed to know. So they're talking about, you know, they're talking about ascending. And, like, we use context clues throughout the movie to figure out that when you turn 18, you ascend, and that's when you gain your full power. But they don't bother to really explain that. And then they start talking about darklings.
Which are the weird ghost things that show up.
But, yeah, so these weird ghosts show up. They start calling them darklings, and then they say, like, oh, someone must have sent you a darkling. And I'm like, so are these things that can be, like, conjured and, like, shown to people? Like, they're not, it's not just a ghost popping up. There's a whole, like, list of rules with these darklings that they don't bother to tell us about.
They don't bother telling you anything. Like, this movie was literally made to show off all of these hot guys, which is fine.
Well, and
like, that's the only part of it I remember.
And here's the thing. I feel like this is one of those movies that, like, when you're scrolling Twitter and somebody's talking about, like, oh, those, like, perfectly queer, like, crappy movies. People talk about this one a lot. There's not, like, a whole lot in it. They're on the swim team. And there's, like, a locker room scene with some butt cheeks.
Locker room scene with some definite butt cheeks, including Blonde Boy, who I definitely remember, like, when I think back to, like, my memories of this movie, I don't remember anything about it. I remember the locker room scene and Blonde Boy's butt, because I thought, oh, like, he's hot and I can see his butt. And then I remember Sebastian Stan's character, I think he's gay, but they never say it. But he just seems like really gay.
That's even worse then, because, hey, let's make the only queer character the villain.
Like, he has some very homoerotic scenes with Caleb.
And there's it's been like a week since I've watched this now, but there's a part of the locker room scene where does somebody call him an F-slur?
Yes, somebody calls him an F-slur.
And that seemed harsh for 2006.
Like, oh, really? Because that seems pretty on point for 2006.
Maybe, yeah. I just remember, like, looking up from my popcorn, like, oh, they said that. Okay.
And some guy is, like, standing in front of him and says something about, like, what are you staring at? And he says, it looks like a penis, only smaller.
I laughed at that, though. I chuckled.
It's probably the only good line in the movie. But I don't know. I just got the intrinsic feeling that he is, like, he's the gay one. Which also, like, why's the gay got to be bad guy?
Yeah, and like, and there's definitely, especially like let's say 2006, this movie comes out and they're wanting to market it towards like high school dudes or college dudes. They can queer code a character, but they're not going to say like, oh, this is our gay character. This is,
oh, definitely not.
You know, and I kind of wish they would have, because then at least there would have been some substance. Like, other than physical characteristics or like the one defining thing that this character does in the movie, like, what do we know about them? Nothing.
We know that, like, they come from witchy, rich families. Let's talk about they're all rich and privileged and white.
Yeah. Not an ounce of melanin to be found in this movie. There are no people of color in it.
This movie, for all of its cinematography.
That's a lie. Wait, I lied. I have to correct myself. Pogue's girlfriend, Kate, is either black or biracial. So there is one person of color in this movie who is barely in it and takes a back seat halfway through. Yes. So.
And like is also super manipulative and bitchy.
Yeah. Both of the girls are really not portrayed super well in this movie. Because Sarah is kind of like the the needy girlfriend and Kate's kind of like the bitchy girlfriend, and neither of them really just get any definition at all. Not that the men do either, but it's just like across the board.
I mean, they got some definition, but that definition's on the abs.
Yeah, true. And the thing that I thought was really funny was that I feel like of the main guys, Reed, the blonde one, is given really the most depth as to who he is. You know, he's the free-spirited prankster. He breaks the rules. He has that whole locker room scene where, if I remember right, I think he stands up for Chase. And then the second half of the movie, he's just at the dance. He's not there. He doesn't help in the final, like, confrontation at all. So even the character that they gave like a little bit of background on, a little bit of character arc to, they sideline him in the end. And it just doesn't make sense to me.
This movie doesn't make sense to me.
That's true. But we do have this whole thing, like you were just saying, about how they're all rich, they're all privileged, they're from this kind of like almost like unofficial like American royal background, and their families live in these mansions, and it's all just very like, I get like Gossip Girl feels from it.
Oh, I don't know, I never watched Gossip Girl.
It's just like that like
I get very Riverdale feels from this.
True too. Yeah, they're like very like Cheryl Blossom but men. But like on the Gossip Girl side, they're like, it's like upper class elite. And like they're better than everybody else, and everybody knows it. And it's just like those aren't characters that you can really root for or relate to, especially when you don't know anything about them.
I mean, no. This movie was literally made for eye candy, which again goes back to who was this movie actually made for?
Yeah, and I don't know what they were trying to say, because one of the notes I wrote down was, does magic equal drugs? Because they kind of give this like, magic is bad, you should only do it in moderation. And yeah. It's like, are they supposed to be comparing it to like drug addiction?
I thought that too.
If they were, like, okay, but not like, this doesn't seem like that kind of movie. So why would you be trying to go like into this deep thematic like drugs equals heroin like idea?
Maybe they were just trying to give it some kind of substance through substance abuse. I don't know.
I never in my life have wanted to like find a director's commentary for a movie so bad because I want to hear what they have to say. Rennie Harlan is the director, and I'm looking at other things that he has done. And boy, is it nothing I've ever heard of, which is fine. Well, he did like a horror movie that I've heard of called Devil's Pass a few years back. Looks like he did like some kind of Exorcist spinoff. But it's just so funny to me. Like, I want to sit down and talk to Rennie Harlan and be like, what was your vision when directing this movie? And I don't know if he would have an answer.
Let's see what the writer has also written. He has written also not very many things that I've seen. The Stepfather.
I've seen that.
Oh, he wrote Prom Night.
The 2008?
Yeah, the remake.
Okay, so it's a writing problem then, because that is one of the single worst slashers that has ever been made.
I've never seen it.
Don't.
It looks like he also didn't work between 2009 and 2021, so...
I'm not one, writing a script in any capacity is hard work, and I'm not one to shit on somebody's work, but if he wrote this movie and he wrote Prom Night, that is like two of the worst teen horror movies from the 2000s. So maybe this just like isn't his genre. Maybe he's better at other things.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that. I would say he is writing from the heart, and his heart probably is located in his penis. Because
I mean, maybe. We don't want to make assumptions, but...
I'm going to make an assumption. I don't know anything about this man. If he ever listens to this, are you a gay man, or are you just very enthusiastic about LGBT? Because he also wrote 2001's homoerotic movie that I've ever seen that was part of my sexual awakening, The Forsaken.
Oh, is that with a Roswell guy?
With Roswell guy and the girl
What
from,
is his name?
Brendan Fair.
Brendan Fair, that was my late 90s crush, so...
And that movie, I remember I watched that with my best friend. I hadn't seen it. I don't even think I knew anything about it, but like we were both really into Roswell. And it's got, the guy, let me look up his name. Kerr Smith is also in it.
Kerr Smith, Dawson's Creek.
Oh, was he in Dawson's Creek?
He was in Dawson's Creek. He was in Final Destination.
That's very, right. He was in Dawson's Creek. Because my friend also was obsessed with Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, he's very on the periphery of being a 90s heartthrob, but I don't think he was like a Leo DiCaprio or anything like that.
Oh, and Jonathan, I don't know, I'm going to butcher his last name. Jonathan Sheesh? I don't know, he plays the big bad vampire in that. And he was in
a
bunch of early queer movies. And that thing
it's also got Simon Rex in it, who I believe was like a porn star. So not that, I mean, again, I'm not knocking any of it.
I think we're going to have to review this movie at some point because this is definitely a queer movie with queer history, personal queer history.
Is it horror? It's a vampire movie, right?
It's scarier than The Covenant. So I think it falls underneath that.
Okay. Yeah. Because here's the thing. The Covenant is really more, I think, almost like sci-fi mystery than it is horror.
It almost seems like it wants to be a horror movie, but it's too gay to do it.
Well, and it's again, for me, it's like it could have gone really hard with the horror, especially with that like gothic boarding school setting. But then you've got like Rob Zombie playing as the soundtrack and it just doesn't.
And you've got a naked boys locker room scene.
And it's even, you know what? Confusing. That's even fine. Fun fact about that, though. Apparently, they had to digitally add steam because there were so many penises that you could see.
Really?
Yeah. And so, they filmed it, realized that there was too much frontal nudity, and then, digitally added in steam into the locker room scene.
Well, that's disappointing.
Well, I mean, it's just... I guess it's a high point of a shitty movie. And, really, honestly, the scene isn't that... no pun intended, steamy. It's not like you see a couple butts.
I think the movie as a whole is so boring and uneventful that for any queer person watching it, just getting to see some naked dude butt is going to be a high point. It's going to be the most
memorable. And whether the movie has queer undertones or not, I think it's really easy to look at a very fraternal brotherly friendship as queer coded. And so these guys, I'm going to say four because I'm not counting Tyler, but these four guys have a very close brotherly bond, but they're not related. And so I think that's where it comes across, especially Caleb and Pogue are very, very close in this movie. And it comes across in a very ooh, it's the early 2000s. Are they secret boyfriends kind of way? Because in the early 2000s, we would have had secret boyfriends. It's one of those things where I think maybe people read from it what they want to, but there's definitely some kind of subtext there.
Oh, there's a ton of subtext.
The subtext is basically text. It's there.
It's there. And for all of them, because even though Bucky Barnes is the gayest one of the group, tall drink of water main guy spends more time with his dude bros than he does this girl that he supposedly is all about. I don't know.
I know he's trying to date Sarah, but he's too busy riding around on Pogue's motorcycle with him to go on a date with her. So,
right. I mean, if that's not some in the closet queer stuff right there. You know,
and just diving back in to get through the rest of this excuse of a plot, we find out through, I think Pogue figures out that Chase is the bad guy. And so Chase causes Pogue to have a motorcycle wreck to put him in the hospital to kind of get everybody distracted. He kidnaps Sarah to draw Caleb away. And basically, he's holding Sarah hostage to draw Caleb to this barn where he, at the stroke of midnight, it's Caleb's birthday. So at the stroke of midnight, he's going to absorb Caleb's power when he ascends. And that's just kind of Chase's grand plan. But it turns more so into like an X-Men battle. They're like shooting, it's like raining and they're shooting these like energy waves at each other. And it's very like choppy editing, Matrix, wire work. It's just all very cheesy.
It's all over the place.
And then you have, I think, Chase walks in and he's like, it's the night of the school dance as well. And so he's like in a black suit and it's just like very like the Man in Black. It's on the nose. There's no subtlety to this movie whatsoever. I feel like we're shitting all over it, but it's just there's not much redeeming about it other than the men that we're looking at. But
that's exactly it. That is the which again. Who was this movie made for?
I would love to know.
I would. That's the biggest mystery of this movie, is what does that marketing meeting look like?
Yeah, because you know, when anything is released, whether it's a movie, a show, an ad campaign, there is a target demographic, and
even before, even in the marketing meeting, or even in the pitch meeting, where they're like, okay. Who is this movie going to be sold to? Can you imagine them pitching it and be like, okay, we've got five hunky guys. Four of them are really good friends. There's some chick on the side that's part of the plot. But these four hunky guys are like really excited for their friend turning 18 finally. And this other guy's already 18. They're going to meet up at a barn later. And we've got a naked locker room scene. We got to have budget for that for sure. Can you imagine, like, the people on the other end of the table going, okay, so this is a gay porno that we're making? Or
if you were to, like, genuinely ask me who I thought this movie was targeted towards, I would say their goal was probably to get high school girls to come to a movie and see the cute guys, but they wanted the high school guys to come to the movie and see some action.
Yeah.
And so they made these... this film, I guess.
Yeah, let's not use that word for
this. Centered around these attractive, cool, leather jacket wearing warlocks. And they wanted teenage boys to like want to be like them. And they wanted the teenage girls to swoon for them. And then they'd sell those movie tickets. But it just did not come across that way.
You could take the men.com logo and stick it in the corner of any scene of this movie. And somebody would hit Google being like, yeah, what men porno is this? Because that is this movie.
And I don't know if it's the same for everybody or if my IMDb search is just that targeted. But when I pulled this movie up on IMDb, the first photo is of Taylor Kitsch shirtless in the locker room. And there's the outline of a butt. So like... I don't know who decides what pictures pop up first, but that's what we get.
They are probably, I don't know, whoever's running IMDb. No, yeah, that is the first photo for me, too. It's the locker room scene.
Yeah, yeah. And it's...
Oh, and there's a butt. That's kind of surprising. I mean, you can barely see it, but there's a butt.
Yeah, it's that digital mist that they edited in. That would have been a full-on butt had they not put the mist in there.
I mean, they should have just left it as is. I think this movie would have done better with full frontal nudity. And not even just as a gay man. I think people would have been like, because it was 2006, dongs in movies were still pretty rare. And I think people would have been like, oh man, there's like full wiener in this. That's so gay. Yeah, let's go see it. Just so we can be like, yeah, we saw full wiener.
And I think it's one of those situations for me where like, it's always a little weird when it's like, I too, at the beginning of this movie, thought it was set in a college. And then realized that it was like a prestigious boarding school. So it's always weird when they're playing like 17-year-olds, but the actors are all like in their mid-20s. So it's not like
full grown adults.
It's not problematic in that sense. But there was what was the movie? I think I was texting you about The Wretched. And there's just that like skinny dipping scene that I'm like, this is really weird, because they literally in the last scene said that the main character is 16, and now they have him like fully nude in a swimming pool scene. Like that's a little, always a little strange to me, but I know the actors are always like of age, but well, I think this movie would have made more sense to have been set at a college though.
It would have made more sense, but this movie doesn't have to make sense because it was some weird mid-2000s movie that they didn't know who they were selling it to.
Well, and like we both are very aware that I would say like 2001 through honestly like probably 2012, 2013 was a really rough time for horror and slasher movies.
Yes.
Because they were all just like trying. There was a few gems in there. Like, you know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, I think is good. Yeah. The Friday the 13th remake, I think is good. But like, there's just some of those like Prom Night and The Covenant and like The Hills Have Eyes and things like that, that were just like trying way too hard and didn't really accomplish anything.
Truth.
All right, do you want to rate these hunks?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, I mean, just for the record, Caleb's dad transfers his power, which we didn't even talk about Caleb's dad, but he's like old and decrepit living in the attic of the house or something. It doesn't matter. Caleb's dad transfers his power to Caleb, so he's like super ascended, and then he beats up Chase, and they set up a fucking sequel to this movie because Chase gets away in the end. Were they really planning to make another one of these? Because wow, that's ambitious.
I mean, I think I'm almost positive that men.com picked up where they left off, so, and they actually hit the target audience.
I could almost see them having tried to set up a TV series, because like it just reminded me that also around this time, I think it was 2003, they did a TV remake movie of Carrie, and they set up the end to start a TV show about Carrie, and the movie did so poorly that the show was just scrapped. And part of me wonders if maybe they were going that route with this, because like Sebastian Stan and wasn't that well known yet. Taylor Kitsch was already like known for Friday Night Lights. So I'm wondering if they were aiming to maybe make a TV show off of this movie afterwards.
Who knows what their thinking was on this.
And you know what? I probably would have watched it, is the sad thing. Hey,
rating these hunks, I'm going to say, going by how I feel about them today, I'm going to give Sebastian Stan 5 out of 5 wieners. What's his face? Tall Drink of Water main guy. He's a close runner-up. And then I'd say Chase Crawford, because I really like him in The Boys, but he's so forgettable in this movie that he's not on my list. So I'm going to have to say Blonde Boy, because you get to see his butt. That's it. Yeah, and that's my highest rating. I give him 3 out of 3 butts.
Okay. Your rating is so weird. I just did out of 10. But so Caleb for me got a 6 out of 10. I said he's vanilla ice cream because he's so boring. Chase, which is the Sebastian Stan one, got a 7 out of 10 because he's Sebastian Stan. Reed, the blonde one, got a 6 out of 10. I said he's blonde. He doesn't look like the other ones. And then Pogue, my long-haired Taylor Kitsch hunk, gets a 9 out of 10 because he's Taylor Kitsch. So, and I didn't rate Chase because I forgot he was in the movie. That's my thing. When I take notes on these movies, I write down the name of every notable character and try to like write down things about them, and his name did not even make it into my notebook. So,
and you are like so meticulous with that. He had to have been written that badly, because the only reason I noticed him is because I watched The Boys, and he's like brilliant in The Boys. And like when I realized it was him, because I was watching it and I'm like, who's that guy? Why does he look familiar? And I'm like, oh my God, it's a young whatever his name is, Chase Crawford. But then like he's you know, a white wall. He's just there.
Yeah, he is just there. He's in like 2 scenes, maybe 3. We never see him after maybe 2/3 of the way through the movie, and that's that. Didn't even know he's a witch. So wait, your number one was Reed, the blonde one, because you get butt cheeks.
No, Sebastian Stan. He got 5 out of 5 wieners.
Okay.
The blonde boy got 3 out of 3 butts.
Okay, so you said Chase / Sebastian Stan was your number one. Mine is Pogue. Honestly, I would argue with you on this one, but it doesn't matter for this movie because they're all the same cardboard cutout of a man.
They really are, which is okay because, you know, we all have a type.
Yeah, we all have a type, and you know, if your type is, you know, pretty and illiterate, then this is the movie for you.
If your type is pretty and illiterate, you're going to love this movie.
All right, so that was The Covenant. What are we going to cover next time, Stu?
Oh, you know what? I say we just keep the ball rolling on this, and we go right into The Forsaken. Because I already mentioned it. I think we should talk about it.
I have to find if that's, like, streaming somewhere. But
If not, I can help. Because I know where to find.
You know the way. Yeah, I let me tell you, I paid to watch The Covenant because I had to rent it from Amazon, like Prime Video. It was $3, and it's $3. That is a small coffee at Starbucks that I will never get back.
Chris, why didn't you tell me? I know websites where you can watch it for free and it will not give you a virus.
I didn't know.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Horror Hunks. Your hosts were Stu Forrest and me, Chris Waltz. Join us again in 2 weeks when we discuss the buddy road trip vampire extravaganza, The Forsaken. Horror Hunks is a Dead Oaks production with music produced by Ben Bryles. Find us on Twitter @HorrorHunks, and until next time, stay horny, don't die.